Clearly, American race relations have come a long way since the civil rights era. But new research shows that a sizable number of Americans still cling to racist attitudes. A recent poll by Yahoo News and the Associated Press found that 40% of white people surveyed agreed with at least one negative stereotype about blacks, that African Americans are violent, lazy, or complaining. The poll found that at least one-third of white Democrats hold such views, and that could have an impact in the general election. In response to these findings, two AP journalists visited neighborhoods in and around Detroit, a diverse but still largely segregated city. Here to tell us more about what they found are AP Washington Bureau Chief Ron Fournier and Aaron Haynes, a journalist in the AP's Atlanta Bureau. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Ron, before we talk about the reporting that you did, let's talk about the poll itself. How was it conducted? What were some of the key findings?
We found people through the old random digit dialing method, screened them, and then put them online to do the poll. So we found used several methods, including asking basic questions, do you like or dislike blacks, but also doing things like flash images over the internet where you get a quick look at a white face, quick look at a black face, and measuring your perception of those. So trying to measure latent racism. Also throwing adjectives at both whites and blacks about whites and blacks. So we found, not just us, there's a lot of scientific background behind this, that people are much more willing to be honest if they're answering questions online to a computer than they are to a real person.
And then you decided to go to Detroit to kind of offer a sort of a deeper, more impressionistic picture of the numbers. Why Detroit?
In part because it's my hometown. And I wanted to go to a place where race has always been a major issue, and where people are living close together but far apart. And I say that because in Detroit, there's places like along 8 Mile Road, the northern border of Detroit, where just north of that street, it's mostly white, and just south of it, it's mostly black. Alter Road, one of the most segregated places you ever want to find in America. It's the dividing line between the very rich Grosse Pointe and the very poor section of Detroit along Jefferson Avenue, along the river. So you would have Aaron and I standing there talking to each other on one of these streets, and one of us would head north and the other would head south, and we'd be walking into very different worlds.
And as you were kind of alluding to, Ron, you're white. Aaron Haynes, you're African American. Aaron, how did you conduct the reporting? Did you split up and Ron talked to the white folks and you talked to the black folks, or did you conduct all your travel together? How did you do it?
Well, actually, it's interesting. The first day, we decided that we would maybe stick together for a little while to talk to people to see how that might go, to see if people would be, open with us about race in front of a black and a white reporter, and that went pretty well. And so then we decided that we would split up and that Ron would go and talk to some white Detroiters and that I would go and talk to some black Detroiters. We did that the first day. And then the second day, we decided, well, I wonder what it would be like if we reverse that.
And what were some of the things that you found? I mean, just give me some. I'm going to ask each of you, what were some of those stories that stood out for you?
One of the stories that really stood out, this is my first trip to Detroit, Michelle, so a very different experience for me, walking through a Grosse Pointe neighborhood and coming across a man who was gardening. He certainly had a lot to say about race and had lived through segregation. And he also was very excited about Barack Obama and actually thought that in his lifetime, he's 71 now, but thought that in his lifetime he would see a black man elected president and was surprised that more people didn't think that was a possibility.
But he also used an interesting term for black children that a lot of us prefer not to use anymore.
Exactly. He expressed his enthusiasm, literally, in the breath after he was sharing with me, a black reporter, sharing with me a story about how he, would run into pickaninnies when he was, in the South working, repossessing, appliances and things from in poor black neighborhoods. So some really stark contrasts.
Ron, what about you? What are some of the stories that stood out for you?
A couple stood out. One was literally as she's talking to this Mr. Thurber in Grosse Pointe, I'm 2 blocks away in Detroit, literally just 2 blocks away. Like I said, it was almost a different world where she's walking past manicured lawns and these mansions. I'm walking past a couple guys with wine in brown bags, shuttered windows, real poor section of Detroit's northeast corner. And I walk into a barbershop, and there's a gentleman sitting there alone in this barbershop. It's in the middle of the day, so it's not very busy, named LeVar Anthony. Young guy, about 30 years old, and I start talking to him about race, and he's sitting in his barber chair and thumbing through Ebony magazine. And he says, what's already understood don't need to be explained. And finally, he starts opening up a little bit. And I thought it put it in pretty good perspective. He talked about how both races look at each other. And he says there are obviously a lot of whites who look down on us from over there. And he points to two blocks away where, coincidentally, my colleague was. And he also says, and he's, you know, obviously looking at me as he's saying this, he says the stereotype against whites is they have all the advantages. They all look down on us. They're snobs. So it just struck me here, it was on our last day, we had done this role reversal, and it struck me, first of all, that he and others who I was talking to weren't holding back because I was a different color, but they're talking about my race in a way that, you know, I didn't want to recognize. The day before, what struck out with me was when I was walking in where my white flight neighborhood had moved to. I grew up in Detroit, but my neighborhood moved north of 8 Mile Road during the 70s and 80s, and I'm walking around, you know, what is my old neighborhood. And there's a guy named Mr. Kokia who was talking about Sarah Palin and can't believe a woman's going to be president. We can't have a woman being president. And saying, you know, it looks like we're going to have a choice between a black man or a white woman. That's a devil's choice is the way he put it. But the
and
more
you thought he was serious.
I did think he was serious, although he was kind of laughing as if I'm not serious. But he really, you know, the idea of having to pick between a woman and a black man was an uncomfortable choice to him. But then again, he's a lifelong Democrat. He's probably going to vote for Barack Obama. He spoke very respectfully of Obama, and it struck me, and this is a phrase that Aaron came up with when we were writing the story, that here was a man who was forced to confront his prejudice, who was going to have to choose between his pocketbook and his prejudice. And that's what's going on in some of these blue-collar white neighborhoods right now.
Well, when you look at the data and when you look at the reporting and kind of put it all together, what did you walk away with as the impressions of sort of where we are in terms of the story of race in this country?
It'd be interesting to see what Aaron says, but I think it was that we have these people living close together who talk about each other as strangers with deep suspicion and in some cases contempt. And as far as we've come in this country on race, we obviously still have a long way to go. There are still places like Alter Road in Detroit where the races are living far apart and in very different ways. And you know, that obviously affects their politics.
Aaron, what about you? What did you walk away with?
I guess I walked away from it feeling like there definitely still is a deep mistrust on both sides and misunderstanding on both sides because these people are unfamiliar with each other, and that can breed misunderstanding or contempt in some cases, as we found out. But at the same time, you find whites are still able to separate Barack Obama from whatever their feelings may be about black people, which I found fascinating, and I don't know if that's a sign of racial progress, but it certainly is indicative of where we might be as a country that they can.
But you know what I noticed, though, is that the fact is you had class on top of race here. I mean, it's one thing to live side by side with people who, you know, there's like you pointed out in the piece that, you know, you've got Porsches on a couple of miles away, you know, people with their Porsches and their manicured lawns. And you've got folks who are clearly in economically very devastated circumstances for all kinds of complicated reasons that we don't have time to talk about. So it seems to me that part of the issue that's going on here is class. If these were poor white people, might not they be equally invisible? I mean, I get letters from white people all the time who just say, when we've done stories about people of color who have found their circumstances to be challenged in some way, and they'll say, that's also my story. So, Ron, I'm asking you because you are in part, you're the guy who picked this place, and you're also a very experienced political reporter. Isolated a lot of variables.
You hit it right on the head, and that's what's so interesting and maddening about this is because you go a little bit further west from Alter Road along 8 Mile Road.
Yeah, 8 Mile.
And people north and south of that road, whites and blacks, are all blue-collar. They're working in the same factories. They're going through the same problems. They're looking at Washington with the same anxiety and anger. They see this bailout package not helping them at all. They're worried about their jobs or losing their houses. They are in the same economic status, yet they won't cross that road. Yet they don't live amongst each other. Yet they look at each other. Misunderstanding is really the perfect world. They just don't understand each other. You can grow up on 10 Mile Road in Woodward in Detroit and have never socialized or known a African-American person. And you can grow up at Livernois in 7 Mile Road in Detroit and have never socialized or really known a white person. So when you have that kind of misunderstanding, it's going to lead to, in some cases, contempt. And it's certainly going to lead to a misunderstanding of each other, which then, you know, that bleeds into every aspect of life, including politics.
Well, you've raised some interesting questions, which the answers cannot be known for a while. I mean, one of the suggestions of the piece is that these sort of lingering racial views maybe suppressing the vote that Obama otherwise could expect, given the overall sort of political landscape for Democrats and given his overall sort of platform and basically. So we'll have to see how it comes out. But I'd like to ask each of you before we let you go, did this push your buttons? I mean, reporters like to disappear into the story. And in this case, you each had to kind of claim your identity. I mean, you sort of were selected for or selected yourselves for this assignment in part and paired yourselves racially, which reporters often sometimes don't do. I mean, they don't often say, well, I'm going to explicitly get a racially mixed team to report the story because I think those perspectives are necessary. So did you feel yourself having to kind of reckon with your own identity in the course of reporting this in a way that you often don't have to do?
Probably not, because I do write about race quite a bit. I guess I will say that as we were interviewing people, as we were asking them to talk about race, about their views about race, and they kept referring to they, you know, when they would describe how members of their own race might feel about members of the opposite race. There's a lot of that that I think people do. People who are my friends, people who are my colleagues that I know. It's like, you know, I'm not racist, but, or, you know, this isn't how I feel or what I think, but, and I definitely recognize that as being something familiar. And I thought about some of that. And certainly, I guess, sitting there talking on the porch with Mr. Turnbull, it was hard. It's hard when those kind of racial pejoratives are, you know, when he said Pickaninny, I mean, I don't know that I heard much of what he said for 10 or 15 seconds after that, to be honest.
But, I have to admit, I scored a bit when Mr. Anthony, the barber, said all whites are snobs. I knew he was looking at me and talking, you know, about me in a way.
And it hurt.
I don't know if it hurt. I mean, I'm sitting there with a notebook and I'm thinking what my lead's going to be too. And thinking, boy, this is a great anecdote. Right. I hope Aaron's getting something.
Exactly. So,
but I
like
knew he was talking.
Really
I knew he was talking about my race and my town.
AP Washington Bureau Chief Ron Fournier is with me in our Washington studio. Associated Press writer Aaron Hayes joined me from WABE in Atlanta. I thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And now we'd like to hear from you. In your community, do you think racial tensions still exist? Do black and white folks live geographically close together, but socially apart? To tell us more about what you think and to find out what other listeners are saying, please visit our blog at npr.org/tellmemore. You can also call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That number again is 202-842-3522. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.